Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, it's great to be back. I would tell you that I'm nice and cocoa butter tan, but that would just be an out-and-out lie, and I never want to lie to my good audience. Plus, Gianna's here to confirm that I'm not exactly tan. A little sunburnt in some places. Had a good time down in Mexico. Had a good time up in Napa. And today we plan on having a good time at the Coliseum. It's game one of the Bay Bridge Series. And let's see. We got both teams a combined 57 games out of first place.
Yeah.
Bring the kiddies, everybody. Sonny Gray has been traded so long. And the best of luck to Sonny Gray. There's no doubt he has been a fan favorite in Oakland since the day he started pitching in Oakland, and today he was supposed to pitch as well, but that is not going to happen. As Gianna just told you, the A's traded Sonny Gray to the New York Yankees after much negotiating over the course of several days. A deal has been struck for shortstops Jorge Mateo, outfielder Dustin Fowler, and pitcher James Caprelian? Do we even know what we're going with it?
Caprelian.
I'm just going to go with what you have. All I know is that his nickname is Tommy John because he's had Tommy John surgery. Fowler had a torn patella tendon this year. They're out with season-ending injuries. Mateo, he's a bit of a speedster. He just turned 22. He's got 39 steals across two levels this season. And maybe Marcus Semien is sensing a little objects getting closer in his rearview mirror because, of course, he is one of the first out here working, as he always is. We are lined up right outside the A's dugout. It is good to be here. Both Gianna and I are tucked desperately under the tiniest umbrella available to stay out of what is a big, bright, sunny day. Gorgeous weather here in Oakland.
It's beautiful.
And if you're coming out to the Bay Bridge Series tonight, I think you're going to get yourself a very, very nice looking ball game. I see a Holy Toledo sign that has covered an outfield. Of course, over the weekend, we saw Bill King inducted into Cooperstown, and rightfully so, and good for his memory, good for fans around here who thought it was long overdue. It is funny. You talk to anybody about Bill King, and they'll tell you how great he was and how versatile he was, but if anyone ranked what he was best at in the terms of play-by-play, the A's are never anyone's first bet. Baseball was never anyone's first bet for Bill King. He was great with the Warriors. He was great with the Raiders, but it is Cooperstown that sees him enshrined under the Frick Award, and congratulations to him. We will certainly, you know, obviously posthumously, congratulations to the memory there.
Sure.
But fans have been waiting for that one, and those who love Bill King had to have been happy with that. I know there were a lot of people from Oakland on hand at Cooperstown just yesterday, and I wonder who's actually back in town. We know that both Billy Beane and David Forrest, of course, are back in town, along with the A's. Ryan Healy is going to be joining us at 4 o'clock today. Coming up in less than 25 minutes, John Morosi joins us talking about all that happened at the deadline today, including the Dodgers signing Yu Darvish for a fifth-ranked prospect in Willie Calhoun and two other prospects. Dodgers also get bullpen help and Tony Watson and Tony Cingrani. So there is a lot of movement there for the Dodgers. A big day for them right in the 11th hour of the deadline. Francisco Liriano traded to Houston for Nori Aoki and a minor leaguer. That's what's going on there. We will have, of course, as always promised, post Game of Thrones coming
Can't
up
wait.
At 3:45, and man, what an episode we got last night. Good news for the Raiders, who certainly aren't getting a lot of good news with the Donald Penn holdout, but their first round draft pick, cornerback Garen Connolly, has been, I guess, cleared. A grand jury decided not to indict Garen Connolly over rape allegations, which is certainly a headline you like to see attached to a first-round draft pick who has the words rape allegations actually applied to him.
Right.
But it seemed like a real he said, she said, and a grand jury's looked at all the evidence and said there is no reason to move forward. That's the best bit of news Reggie McKenzie, I think, has had over the last few days. When the Raiders all of a sudden are finding themselves without their starting tackle, Donald Penn, who is holding out. Lots of things happened while I was gone. Albie put together a little list, and it's even more than I really thought. I always tell you that when I go on vacation, news breaks here
it's
in the
true.
Bay. It's just karma can't help it. 49ers have signed Solomon Torres. Raiders did sign Garen Connolly, who just an hour ago, like we said, had his grand jury rape case dismissed back in the state of Ohio. We had Steph Curry melting down the internet in, you know, he basically, people are saying he mocked LeBron. He did an impression of LeBron Instagram's video while Kyrie stood by laughing, and that to me is more of the story. Our friend slash enemy, Nick Wright, was like, look at the disloyalty. Look at the disloyalty. And I had to go on Twitter to say, look, don't let the baby face ever fool you. Don't let the great media demeanor fool you. Steph Curry is a straight up killer. He is a killer. He is ruthless in the way that he builds a team around him, keeps it together, and knows just when to come out nudging, nudging, nudging. And, oh, by the way, the fact that Kyrie Irving has asked to be traded and Derrick Rose signed with the Cavs is something that is also in the headlines that we missed. The Warriors re-sign the nation. JaVale McGee is back. We know that Donald Penn is a Raider holdout. Jordan Spieth won the British Open. I was down there in Mexico on Sunday, and I was telling Jillian, I said, for the first time in my life, I do not know who won the British Open. And I'm not comfortable with that.
No,
like I
want to
be detached. It's good to get away. Doctor said get away, and don't worry about sports or your job while you're gone, but I love this stuff.
It's like snippets of information.
I love this stuff, and I want a little British Open knowledge here. I'm glad I got it, and it was no surprise that Jordan Spieth, who is now, just ahead of his 24th birthday, they're just the best golfer in the world. Pablo Sandoval is back with the Giants officially, who did officially nothing at the trade deadline. Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija are still in a Giants uniform. Neither has gone anywhere. Brandon Belt hasn't gone anywhere. We might be talking to a Giant a little bit later on today. John Morosi again coming up in about 20 minutes. Ryan Healy at 4 o'clock. Bruce Jenkins is going to stop on by at 5:30. John Dickinson from 49ers camp will join us at 6 o'clock. And the A's dugout show gets on deck around 6:15 this afternoon. Looking forward to all that coming up. Got other things that were... That's probably not good, but there's no stopping them right now. The Dodgers went 6-0 with Clayton Kershaw on the DL. They are playing out-of-their-minds baseball and just added Yu Darvish. We got Michael Phelps kind of racing a shark. Really not even worth talking about.
Yeah.
Kind of there.
Such a letdown.
Draymond Green has the guy that he allegedly slapped around in East Lansing going forward with press conferences. That looks like a money grab all day long. He's talking about how he can't sleep at night. He's got mental trauma. Come on. Like, I wonder why you're getting a reputation as a soft athlete. If you're going to come forward in public with stuff like that, that's the way the world works. We got Draymond Green then calling out McGregor for wearing a Warriors jersey. Look, we love Draymond, but I really don't think that he can pick and choose who wears Warriors merchandise. Let's see. We had David Price get into it with Dennis Eckersley. Yeah. Now he's got elbow problems, so karma's going to get you. A lot of football players, according to a New York Times story, are guaranteed to end up with CTE. You can bet on that happening, or at least that continuing to be a story all year long. And is it serious? You know what it is. But as I've kept on saying, and I'm going to stick with this until I go blue in the face, NFL fans don't care about CTE. The NFL itself doesn't care about CTE. All of their concern is lip service for PR purposes. Let's be totally honest. That's the absolute truth. Nobody is going to not watch games because of domestic violence. It is the only thing the NFL could do to really start turning fans off, in my opinion, it is already done. You become disloyal to cities and fan bases that have long supported your product, and you spit in their eye in the name of big-time profit somewhere else. And we've seen that happen twice in L.A., once in Las Vegas, with the cities of Oakland, San Diego, St. Louis, all being abandoned for higher profits somewhere else. Oh, I know that the Raiders are going to play here for a few more years, but to me personally, it's tough to get excited about anything knowing that they are going to catch the fastest train possible out of town as soon as they can. This is also a little bit of news. John Gruden might want to coach again.
Maybe kind of, sort of.
He's never going to do it. That's not even newsworthy, all things considered. LeVar Ball continues to be an absolute clown show, telling any woman in earshot to stay in her lane if he doesn't like the way you're officiating an AAU game. He'll go on the court and have you removed. I don't know what that's about. We go back to baseball to see that the Giants did do something, but it wasn't much of something. Eduardo Nunez traded to the Red Sox for two prospects. We had Adrian Beltre join the 3,000 hit club. That happened. Like we said, at Cooperstown, Jeff Bagwell, steroids. Ivan Rodriguez, steroids. Tim Raines, all kinds of things. And Bud Selig, the steroid commissioner, along with Bill King, handlebar mustache, inducted into the Hall of Fame. Bob Melvin picked up win number 1,000. Congratulations to him. And I think that's about it. That's kind of what we missed, which, as usual, is an awful lot whenever we go on vacation. But the big story here at the Coliseum today is Sonny Gray, who won so many games, represented so much hope, was one of the interesting, got-to-watch-him-pitch guys in the rotation, is now a New York Yankee. And I say this without disrespect to the A's, who are allowing us to share their field today, and we're very appreciative of that as we come to you just about, 30 yards, not even, 20 yards away, 10 yards away from third base this afternoon, just outside the A's dugout. All things, congratulations to Sonny Gray. He gets to really pitch for a Major League Baseball team that is dedicated to spending, dedicated to winning, dedicated to making sure a run to October is not just something that is promised once or twice a decade, but a routine thing. And Sonny is, now about to join an outfit that has a real sight on winning and doing it the real way. The New York Yankees are absolutely a no-joke franchise. And if you're Sonny Gray, as appreciative as you've been about what's happened to you here in Oakland, you go to New York, you head to New York, appreciative of the fact that you're about to go play like real Major League Baseball. Not that the A's are pretend Major League Baseball, but their way of doing things has been an illusion and pretend for a really long time, and that is not going to end as long as the search for a new stadium continues. And there was a very interesting article by the soon-to-be retiring Mark Purdy today about how he and Andy Dolich went around and literally put their feet on the ground of the upcoming, to be expected, being debated by the A's right now, three sites that are really possible to build a ballpark on. They went to the Peralta site.
Okay.
They went to Howard Terminal, and they took a good look here at, what is it, the Coliseum. And in both of their summations, as I've been saying for a long time, the single best place for a new ballpark for the Oakland A's is right here. They would be crazy to leave what is a perfectly set up situation from a parking and transportation standpoint to go to a location that might buoy downtown or pretty up the scenario a little bit, but not serve the fan the absolute best who has to come and travel to the game. You know, it seems like this right here, not in the Coliseum footprint, but to the right or left of the Coliseum. These are, what is this? This is like a 250-acre site. This is a huge site to build on. Oracle Arena is something that I'm not saying tear it down, but it is going to be much easier to work around when the Warriors end up moving out. The A's have countless possibilities to maybe in the least seductive least pretty location, build a ballpark that suits and serves them and their fan base as well as any area possibly could that isn't right here. So more about that will be discussed. I've obviously expressed how I feel about it. If we go back to the studio to express how I feel about the A's at any point in time here, you just let me know when you got it ready. I would appreciate that, Elena, back in the studio. My now, what they call, not only infamous A's rant, but test of post-stroke broadcast rant and ability. If you would, please, bouton vixen.
Announce it! Where's the stadium? Get me a stadium! Do it now!
We need a few more months to talk to our Blue Ribbon panel.
Shut up!
And I seriously feel that way. And now that Sonny Gray is traded and that conversation, you know, what are the A's going to trade next? What's going to happen next? Now that that conversation has come to an end, I really feel that they owe it to you fans to make an announcement soon, before the end of the season. What are the A's going to wait until football season starts and they can't buy attention to go ahead and make their big announcement? The announcement should have come the Thursday after the Major League All-Star game. I really don't know what they're looking at or trying to put together at other locations when they're about to be the only tenant, the last man left standing right here at the Coliseum, which would be absurd to have been abandoned by three franchises.
Just to get your fans excited a little bit, you know?
You got
to
give them
a little something.
Got to give them something to look forward to. Again, we're very appreciative of the A's having us here today. We're not trying to rain on anybody, but it's time. I mean, you're officially becoming an unwatchable, unattendable product with the popular players that you continue to move and play in a park that should have been replaced more than a decade ago. This is not going to be hard to figure out what to do as soon as the Raiders are gone and as soon as the Warriors are out of the way as well. This looks to be the single best option available. There's no place like home. And if you claim to be rooted in Oakland, you got a whole bunch of hurdles to overcome. At Laney College, the Peralta site, you've got a whole bunch of hurdles to overcome in terms of the Howard Terminal site, and you have almost zero hurdles to clear and the stage all to yourself right here. The A's should begin construction this fall.
Why not?
On a new parking lot. Like, I don't know what they're looking at. There is plenty of space to the right or the left of this Coliseum to build a brand new baseball facility. This Coliseum, for all of its memories and the fact that it is in an ugly duckling kind of way, a little awesome in its own right, should be torn down. It should be razed, completely leveled. You've got Mount Davis, the biggest architectural disaster in the history of sports, sitting in center field, and the remaining guts of this place are no great shakes and are probably easier replaced than gussied up through renovation. Let's be totally honest. I mean, what are you going to do with luxury suites that are nothing short of soulless concrete bunkers? You're not going to make those any better. So you might as well do something. You might as well do something, since today your something was trading Sonny Gray. That hurts. It absolutely hurts. If you're a smart baseball fan, you knew it had to come. You knew what the A's cycle was, and we'll certainly be opening up the phones to hear from you a little bit later on at 888-957-9570. So it's going to be Matt Cain against Paul Blackburn. Giants coming off a sweep by their rivals down in L.A. Giants officially now have the worst record in baseball following a Phillies win today. They are 40-66. They are 34 and a half games back at the Dodgers, which is the furthest that they've been out of first place since the last day of the 1946 season. And this is a team that did nothing at the trade deadline. Did nothing. They're standing pat because they believe that this year is an anomaly. They're right there. Just had an off year that is spanned from now one All-Star game to the last. I mean, it's been a disaster All-Star to All-Star year for the San Francisco Giants. But they don't trade Cueto. They don't trade Samardzija. They don't trade Belt. They do move Nunez. But at the deadline, nothing happens. Kind of surprising. Very gun-shy. And Bobby Evans and company have placed an awful lot of faith in a product that officially ain't and hasn't clicked since the first half of last season. It's been rough. The A's are 46-59. They traded their best pitcher and player and most identifiable fan product today in Sonny Gray. So if you're listening to the sound of my voice, if you're listening to Gianna's update coming up at the bottom of the hour, we invite you, boys and girls, to come out to the, worst Bay Bridge series ever on the schedule, where the two teams are a combined 57 games out of first place. But here we are.
Yes, we are.
On a beautiful sunny day, and I guess we're appreciative of that.
You gotta have a little fun with the family still.
Yeah.
Just don't expect much on the field.
If you like food trucks, this is absolutely the ball club and place for you to be. There's no doubt about it. So what kind of haul did the A's get for Sonny Gray? We check in next with our good friend from MLB Network, John Morosi. We talk to him on the other end. This is the Damon Bruce Show.
This has been, so far, the best year of baseball I've ever in my life.
Sonny Gray is just one of those special guys.
There's a quiet confidence about that kid.
He has the stuff.
The inside corner, ring him up.
He has the work ethic.
He was able to fight through it and still put up zeros.
He has that it factor.
And the pitch to Trout is swung on and missed. A fastball up and away at 94.
Sonny K's the side in the second.
This is a really good-looking young pitcher.
Swung on and missed. Fastball up and in. Sonny Gray gives up the double to Pence, but he strikes out Blanco, Belt, and Posey.
Sonny Cy Young Gray.
This trap thing is really giving him some doubt because he's not throwing the ball where he wants to, and he's trying to pitch around it a little bit. He's cutting off some pitches, and it's just not going where he wants it to go.
I still think he will get it figured out. It's just, this is not the Sonny Gray that we're used to seeing.
He's had a tough time this year. I still feel like the stuff's good. I still feel confident every time he goes out there.
But I think since he's come back, this is the guy that we had, not last year, but the previous year. He looks really good.
He's in a really good place right now.
Tight breaking ball that time from Sonny.
Yesterday my heart was filled with rain.
Swing and a miss.
Sonny.
He's one of the best in the game.
You smiled at me and really eased the pain.
10 strikeouts.
Oh, the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My Sonny one shines so sincere. Sonny one so true.
A's fans are going to miss him. I just got a tweet from a guy who says that his sons have all grown up, his kids have all grown up, lifelong A's fans, and they're still like 13, 11, and 9 years old, and they're just totally jaded. Like, their favorite player gets traded. They don't even bat an eye now. So is the life of A's fans. It just happens over and over again. Again, we're very happy for Sonny Gray. Very happy that he gets to go on and really be in a competitive situation. And we'll see the A's, once again, try to pick up the pieces and repeat the cycle that we've seen happen over and over and over again. When will it stop? When will it stop? To talk about that and who the A's get back for Sonny Gray, we're very happy to welcome in John Morosi from Fox Sports and MLB to join us today. John, how are you, buddy?
Happy deadline day to you, Damon. It's been a very busy day, but a great day.
Yeah, very busy day. Let's start with the trade of Sonny Gray for Three's prospects. What kind of return did David Forst and Billy Bean get after really what was a 72-hour-long negotiation? They burnt the midnight oil on this one.
They did, Damon. High risk, high reward. I think that's the best way to describe it because certainly with the prospects they got back from the Yankees, two injured players right now, which certainly I think makes you wonder, gives you some degree of pause. But when you are in the A situation and Billy Bean talked about wanting to have the full rebuild to build it back from the very, very basic levels, you have got to find a way to extract whatever value you can. So if it ends up having to be a Fowler who's injured, Caprellian who's injured, you do it, and then you hope that obviously they bounce back and are healthy, and then Jorge Mateo, a really good, promising young infielder as well.
Well, and I think that that is probably the prize of the trade, or at least the closest thing there is to a sure thing with two guys, one dealing with a torn patella, the other coming off of Tommy John. Let's be totally honest. I think this deal took a while because Sonny Gray has proven himself oft injured in the last season or two as well. And who do you think did most of the prying to get the deal done? The A's or the Yankees here? Who was most pressed to sell the other team on the idea that this is the right move?
It's a great question, Damon. And when you look at the return, I think the fact that the A's ultimately had to accept two injured players as opposed to the Esteban Florial piece, who was certainly a very highly regarded Class A outfielder, or Clint Frazier. I think those are the questions that I think, and those are the factors that lead me to believe that Oakland had resolved to trade him, that they identified the Yankee farm system as being the best match for them, and that ultimately Billy decided, I'm going to take the best offer I can from that particular team. And that was the best offer. So I give credit to Brian Cashman for holding out in the manner in which he did without having to give up. Again, the Clint Frazier, who of course is already in the big leagues, or Esteban Florial down at AAA, Class A rather. So he was able to make this deal happen without giving up his best, healthiest prospects, or Gleyber Torres for that matter, who also was injured, by the way. So there was, I think, a very good bit of brinkmanship there by Brian Cashman there with the Yankees. And he got the guy, Damon, that I think is in Sonny Gray, is going to be able to help stabilize their rotation going forward. They know that they're going to have CeCe Sabathia leaving the organization more than likely in the next couple of years. Michael Pineda out for the year and out for next year with Tommy John surgery. They just acquired Jaime Garcia, but he's just a rental. So that's why I think that the Yankees did not want to get two rentals. They wanted maybe one rental piece in Garcia to help them get through this year, and then the longer-term piece in Sonny Gray to really help stabilize their rotation into the future.
We've got the Giants and A's beginning the Bay Bridge series, a combined 57 games out of first place. Mm. Who would have thunk this season would have gone quite like this, especially for the Giants, who do Bubkiss at the deadline. Yes, they moved Nunez, but I can't help but see Cueto and Samardzija are still in town.
They are, and certainly Matt Morris as well, and I thought that based on the way he pitched last time out, he might have had some interest. But Damon, I think it goes back to a lot of the conversations we've had on this network the last couple months, about what the Giants could do and how much they really could remake this club on the fly. And I think that the answer that you and I came to many times was they just don't have that many great trade chips right now because they've got guys on big contracts or guys who are their more rental types who aren't performing that well. If Matt Cain had a 3.5 ERA, he'd probably be traded by now. You look around, and Nunez was a rental piece. He was traded. If Span, you know, the Span's actually had a pretty decent year offensively. However, not that many teams need bats right now. So that's why I think Span stayed put. Maybe he moves in the month of August, but I would say Span likely is going to be a Giant through the end of the season. So this is really, I think, for them, they have to find a way, Damon, into the future to maybe get a bit more athletic all around the diamond, get a little bit younger. I don't know how and where they're going to do it, given the fact they have so many big contracts on the books for next year already, and Brandon Belt's money goes up, and Crawford's still signed and not going anywhere. So they've got a lot of decisions to make. I thought it was interesting. I saw the report about Joe Panik's name popping up in some trade talks with the Angels. I wonder if he is maybe part of that conversation in the wintertime as the Giants try to figure out where they're going and if they want to maybe use second base as a way to introduce a bit more athleticism. I still think Panik's going to be a really good number two hitter in his league for a long time, but you just wonder how imaginative they're going to be able to be given the restrictions they already have right now based on their payroll.
John Morosi of Fox Sports and MLB Network joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Any doubt in your mind that Yu Darvish to the Dodgers is the move of moves this deadline?
It's a great move, Damon, for so many reasons. I'm talking to you from Dodger Stadium right now, actually, and I was here last night. I saw the walk-off win by the Dodgers, their ninth of the year to lead the majors. The magic dust on this team, it wafts through the stadium when you walk here. It's unbelievable what's happened right now with the Dodgers. And they needed that one more big-time pitcher to help lessen the burden on Clayton Kershaw, who, of course, right now is still in the DL. And Alex Wood has had an injury history. Rich Hill has had an injury history. Hyunjin Ryu, who was very good last night, still has had an injury history of his own. So there are enough concerns that they simply had to get at least one more starting pitcher. They've done it. I think you're careful not to change up too much of your club because it's played so well. But if you're going to make adjustments, you always do it with pitching. You do it with pitching. You don't do it with your position players as much because that changes the essence of your club. This club has functioned so well, there's no need to change that. So you just add the right pitching. You get a couple bullpen arms to help you with the left side with the likes of Cingrani and Watson. Then you get a righty starter in Darvish to really help you out against what's probably going to be a right dominant opponent in the first round of the playoffs. So, Damon, I love this move on so many levels.
All right, so the Mariners' magic number is 116. I think the Dodgers are playing at a clip right now that projects them to win like a 120, 121, 22 games. Do you think it happens? Do you think you, Darvish, is that? No doubt about it, you guys are now the best team in baseball with all the magic dust sprinkled all over them as well as the talent to complement the magic dust.
Well, Damon, I would tell you this, that right now they are the team of 2017 until someone proves otherwise. They have the best record. They have shown they can win in so many different ways. Everything about the way they're playing baseball right now tells me this is a World Series team. Now, are they perfect? No. They do certainly have some issues that they'll have to iron out as time goes on, specifically about that durability in their rotation. But aside from that, the way the lineup works right now, they have youth. They have experience. They have a great manager who's really, I think, struck a chord with this club. Yasiel Puig is playing better, more consistently. We saw that again last night. So, Damon, to me, it's not a perfect team, but it's pretty close. A
couple of milestone numbers I just want you to go over real quick, John, before we say thanks. Adrian Beltre at 3,000 hits. That is a kind of a shoe-in number for the Hall. It always has been. Adrian Beltre has been one of the best guys that never got one of the best guys coverage throughout his entire career. And another unappreciated number, because it's always about the front office, Billy Beane, David Forrest, and the way that Moneyball has pretty much permeated the culture here. Bob Melvin, 1,000 wins. That's nothing to shake a stick at. That's a big number.
Yeah, you're right. I'm glad you mentioned Bob there, because he has done it in three different places. He's had a lot of success. I think he really, I believe, Damon, in many ways, strikes a great balance between the modern manager and also someone who played and had a nice career in the big leagues as well. So I think he's so smart. He's a great communicator. He commands the respect of the players. I think that he's an easy guy to like, easy guy to root for. I've always just enjoyed my interactions with him. And, you know, you meet all kinds of people in baseball, Damon. Bob Melvin's one of the easiest people in this game to talk to. Great guy. Congratulations to him and his family. Phenomenal work. And then Beltre, listen, all we have to say is this. Right now, there's only one player in the history of baseball who played third base as his primary position and has 3,000 hits and 450-plus home runs, and that person is Adrian Beltre.
There you go. A club of one is a good club to be in when you're trying to fill out your Hall of Fame resume. Talking about easy guys to talk to, John Morosi, thanks again, my friend.
My pleasure, Damon. Happy deadline day. It was a lot of fun today. I think I have a nap sometime in my future.
You definitely do have a nap in your future. Dow, you need any Ambien to get there. You've been burning that midnight oil. Thanks very much, John. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure, Damon. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the nicest guys every single week we talk to, John Morosi. One of the wickedest women in all the land, Cersei Lannister, who gets recapped post-Game of Thrones around the corner.
Dragons do not do well in captivity.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
Now,
my girl has been given a second chance.
On the Damon Bruce Show.
There will not be a third.
It's post-game.
The real war is between the living and the dead.
Of Thrones.
And make no mistake, the dead are coming.
Oh, the dead are coming, and that was a huge plot point that they were trying to convey in this third episode of Season 7, The Queen's Justice, and it was, without a doubt, the best episode we've had since, Battle of the Bastards? It was fantastic. So it begins with Dragonstone, seeing Jon Snow and the Onion Knight finally reach its shores, greeted by Tyrion and Missandei, who showed the goodies in Episode 2, which we were not allowed to go over because I was on vacation, Gianna.
Right.
Great conversations everywhere on the walk to the throne room. Snow talks about Sansa and then says, I'm not a Stark, just as a dragon buzzes him. Right as he says it, I think there is an awful lot of hinting, foreshadowing going on right there. We have Varys talking to the Red Witch, telling him that she's going to steer clear. Says that both might die in Westeros, both will die there. Introductions happen in the throne room. Bend the knee turns to conversation. Tyrion is there to smooth everything out. Finally, we got Jon Snow and Dany Targaryen in the same scene. Very good. We've been waiting for that. Snow's telling Dany about the White Walkers, has to sell this to her. She's got no idea. She only wants to rule. The Army of the Dead is not on her radar. It's 20 minutes of big conversation between huge characters. And then the news comes of the Armada raid. Euron Greyjoy parades Tomboy Greyjoy and the Living Sand Snakes to Cersei, feeling himself. He eggs on Jaime Lannister some more. Good scene there. Cersei, evil. The plot to kill her prisoners from Dorne, it pretty much include the long kiss goodbye to the daughter, and the plan is to let the mother watch her rot across from her in the same cell. Yara's fate is unknown. Theon remains a wuss. Cersei's meeting with the Iron Bank shrewdly says all debts will be paid, and we figure out why a little bit later on. We go back to Dragonstone. We got Jon Snow and Tyrion meeting atop of the cliff. You look a lot better brooding than I do is one of the best lines of the episode. It is a good conversation, and he basically wants to broker how to get some dragon glass to forge weapons they need and how to get a little bit closer in the relationship between Dany Targaryen and Jon Snow. We go to Winterfell for our only check-in on Sansa and Littlefinger all episode, who gives her an awesome warning, and then Bran Stark shows up to see Sansa for the first time since season one. I'm going to from now on call him Emo Brand, because didn't you think he was very emo and like ultra comp? Very emo. He's Emo Brand going on right now. He's the three-eyed raven now, and his magic tree is right there so he can get in the roots, I guess, and see it all. He convinces Sansa that he sees the future and the past, but it's all a little cobblestone together right now. It needs to be more clear for him, and he basically proves to Sansa that he knows how rough she's had it right there at Winterfell. We go to Old Town, where Sam cures Jorah of the Stone Man disease. He's good again. Sam is given props after being lectured by his maester superior. He shakes the hand. What a big sign of trust between Jorah and Sam. Jorah is officially back in the game.
Yep.
Sam's going to be a great maester. There is no doubt about it. Then we come to the best scene, maybe of the entire episode. Tyrion narrating how Casterly Rock, which is seen for the first time in the series, has a weak spot that he built when he was in charge of sewer construction. And now we see Grey Worm and the Unsullied doing their thing. They take the rock easily thanks to Tyrion knowing how to get in. The Unsullied find it a little too easy because most of the Lannister army is sacking Highgarden, which we also see for the first time, and it's for the gold to repay the Iron Bank. We then see the Queen of Thorns. The Queen of Thorns, one of my favorite characters, for the last time. Jaime finds her alone. She's as sassy as ever in her moment of death, telling Jaime that Cersei is going to corrupt him. She drinks the poison that he offers her as the easy way out instead of cutting off her head. But she admits that she is the one who killed Joffrey right after her fate gets sealed. A phenomenal scene and one of the best death revenge middle finger scenes in the entire episode. So to recap quickly, Gianna, that's the best episode since Battle of the Bastards. There was a lot of plot being driven forward. We've seen setup and setup, and this was a serious drive the plot forward episode. Major characters are finally now connecting. Cersei, who looked outgunned, has a lot of control all of a sudden. She's all up in Dany's plans. It was great, with a great death scene, a great torture scene. fantastic episode of Game of Thrones. I'm giving it 3.5 out of 4 Valyrian steel swords this week.
It definitely was one of my favorites of the season so far. The ending, Olenna Tyrell, to see her just tell Jaime, who I was so surprised that they didn't figure that out at this point. Right. I was very shocked. I'm like, really? You don't know that she took out Joffrey? But I thought that was great. This whole Jaime versus Euron thing, why is Euron just constantly egging him on? I think that's it's a very interesting subject. I think Jaime's getting a little annoyed with his sister and some of her antics. Who is riding the dragon next episode? That stuck out to me when I saw previews. Is it going to be Jon Snow? Because there's that alleged that he is a Targaryen instead of Daenerys. And then the meeting with Bran, I was happy. I'm glad there's Stark reunions, but I was a little put off by his demeanor. I guess he's changed. Like you said, emo Bran.
Right. Yeah,
I know he's a three-eyed raven, but I just expected more of like
hug your sister.
My sister, I haven't seen. I thought everyone was dead. What's going on?
Sansa's hugging him. She's crying. And he, who's not a quadriplegic, like doesn't put his arms around her.
I know. It's just,
so what? He's just stone cold three-eyed raven now?
I think so. He's changed. And Sam, one of my favorite characters now. I mean, one of the best characters of this whole series so far.
It was a really, really good episode. I don't know if he's watching, but my Beverly Hills rabbi is on the phone, probably wanting to talk trade deadline and a little Darvish to the Dodgers all of a sudden. Rabbi, how are you?
Okay, you know, you spent about 5 minutes talking about the Dodgers. I couldn't believe it.
Well, they are the best team in baseball, making the most interesting, biggest impact move, I think, at the deadline beyond what Sonny Gray, if he remains healthy, could be for the New York Yankees. It's a big deal, man. You, Darvish, is an ace, and you put him behind Kershaw.
All of our papers here were saying the Dodgers were not going to make any moves at all. You can't, you know, and then all of a sudden, I don't know if these guys, you know, just do that or what. That was interesting. But why are the Dodgers doing so well?
It's because you got them serving kosher food at least 4 kiosks.
True. Okay, but I give them my blessings as well. Don't make my blessings.
Did you ever at any point, Rabbi, put the Maloikia on the Giants? Because they're playing like you might have given them the evil eye.
I told you I didn't do that. I'm not blessing them. I'm blessing the Dodgers, and you see what happens. But by the way, you know, people go to the games to enjoy themselves and to root for your team. You know, look at the A's yesterday. I mean, I was trying to follow the score, and they come from behind and they win, just like the Dodgers. I mean, you know, it's exciting.
Yeah, you get walk-offs, fans leave the ballpark happy, you know, and then they see Sonny Gray get traded the next day. It's another tough pill to swallow in what has been season.
You know, he's been on and off. I'm happy to see Sandoval back. You know, I met Sandoval when I first met, and I was in San Jose. I have his autograph here, and he was doing so great. And he went to Boston. Everybody said that was a mistake, and obviously it was a mistake. Hey, I hope he can come back because he's a nice guy.
Whenever you're 35 and a half out and you can add a 212 hitter who's only played 35 games over the course of 2 years due to his eating habits, you got to make that move, Bobby Evans. Come on, Rabbi. He's a member berry. He's trying to sell warm and fuzzies. Come on. Thank you, my friend. Great to talk to you. He is the Beverly Hills Rabbi. If he gives you a blessing, it goes far. I wonder if he gave a blessing to Steve Bartman, who, by the way, and also other baseball news, is going to receive a World Series ring. WGN reporting that Steve Bartman, who was made infamous when he didn't interfere with a foul ball, really. If I threw you a pair of keys, you'd try to catch him.
Sure.
There is nothing wrong with what Steve Bartman did, and to have Moises Alou overreact and basically turn this guy into someone blame for a loss he had nothing to do with. Alex Gonzalez made 3 errors that night at shortstop. We're going to pretend that didn't happen. The Cubs say that they're going to give him an official 2016 World Series championship ring, like with all the real diamonds and rubies in it.
Wow.
Or is he going to get the Jostin's ring?
Of course,
Jostin is the official ring maker for every high school and college graduation.
What do you think? I think they're going to give him the whole kit and caboodle.
If I were him at this point, I would want so little to do with the Cubs and the city of Chicago. I would tell them to stick it where the sun didn't shine. I don't think I would really be that interested and picking up any paraphernalia. That guy's life was ruined to the point where he had to move. Absolutely had to move.
But now they got a World Series. There's closure. Now we can move on.
We can move on. I hope we're going to be able to move on to an A's player. Ryan Healy was scheduled to appear, and I hope that that happens next. If not, we will go with the flow. We are out here at the Coliseum just before the start of the Bay Bridge Series on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.